Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hello and welcome to Grazia Life Advice, Grazia's podcast. I'm Rhiannon and each week I'll be interviewing women worth listening to and getting them to pass on the 6 best pieces of advice they've ever been given. And the worst piece too. Our guest this week is singer Sophie Ellis-Bextor, who after 21 years in the music industry is about to release her greatest hits. The album has a twist though. The Song Diaries, out next year, will feature her biggest hits like Murder on the Dance Floor, but reworked with grand orchestral arrangements. She's also recently announced the album is set to coincide with the birth of her 5th child, but she'll still be taking the music out on the road next summer. Sophie has recently released a new single, Love Is You, and we met her at her absolutely gorgeous London home, where she talked about everything from the terrifying prospect of being on Strictly Come Dancing to how to best cook fish. I loved meeting her, and I think it's an interview packed with great advice, whether you like fish or not. So, over to Sophie. I'm here with Sophie Ellis-Bextor. Hi, Sophie.
Hello, how are you?
Good. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I'm really excited to hear your best advice, but I just want to talk to you first because you've got a bit of a busy patch coming up. You've got new album and new arrival as well. How are you feeling? Are you good?
Yeah, it's definitely not many dull moments going on at the moment. Yeah, so I've got my, I guess it's my 7th album coming out, which is an orchestral greatest hits. So I've reworked songs like Murder on the Dance Floor and Take Me Home and Groove Jet, but with full orchestra, which has been really fun. And the single that's out at the moment is a disco song, which is kind of pulling it all together, really, because we're taking the orchestral album on the road. But when I do it, it will be half orchestral and half actual disco, because we're going to have a full band as well. So it's kind of old school New York disco, Philadelphia strings. So I thought it'd be nice for a single to be a disco song. So I've used this song called Love Is You, which actually was the song that Groove Jet was sampled from. So
right,
it kind
okay.
of brings everything full yeah. circle.
That sounds like a great party night out, and you've got the strings and the disco. Are you hoping it will be that kind of vibe when you tour it eventually?
100%. Like, if I will be getting people dancing by the end. Like, that's a given, definitely.
Amazing. So we're here to hear your best piece of advice, and I'm excited to hear what you have for us. So what is the first piece of advice?
So the first piece of advice, and probably the one thing I always think of when people ask me about advice, is about trusting your instincts. Sounds pretty basic, but actually I think it's very easy to stop doing that. It was advice given to me by my mum from when I was really young. And I think particularly if you work in a job like my job, which isn't a proper job, where there are many, many forks in the road and not really right and wrong answers about what you do next. It's always suited me to do the thing that's felt like I could sleep well at night.
Okay.
And it's not necessarily the most obvious thing. It's not necessarily the easiest thing, but it's about the thing that just makes you feel good in your bones, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody's got their own opinion about, where everybody would draw the line if they've, if you're making music and what you're promoting and how you live your life, really. It's very easy to be judgmental. But I think when you work in a job like mine, which is very bespoke, then so long as you've gone into it, everything feeling like your instincts are good, you can kind of live and die by what happens next. And certainly that's always seen me right.
Have you ever found your instincts rub up against things that maybe management and companies don't want you to do? And how have you dealt with that?
Yeah, frequently, actually. And I totally appreciate that that's frustrating, because everybody else has got ideas about things too. And I'm fortunate enough to have lovely people around me, people I've worked with for a long, long time. And I respect the opinions of others, and I'm somebody that likes to talk to everybody about advice anyway. So if I've got a dilemma, I will ask My husband, Richard, about stuff. I'll ask my mum about stuff. Obviously, my manager. I've made the last few albums with a musician friend of mine called Ed Harcourt. I'll probably ask Ed about stuff. I've got girlfriends I've known since school who I ask about stuff. So there's probably, if I've got something on my mind, there's probably about 8 people I'll talk to. But ultimately, the decision's got to rest with me. And it can be hard because, especially with a job like mine, there's lots of things. People always assume that the right answer to everything is yes. If you get an opportunity, if it's something that will raise your profile, if it's something that will get your song heard by more people, that automatically it should be a yes. But actually, I came to learn quite early on the power of saying no to stuff as well. Just because you can find yourself in a predicament which makes you just feel uneasy, that you've done something that doesn't quite represent who you are and just feels a little bit once removed from the version of yourself you want to be. And it's very easy to lose your identity, particularly the beginning of a career, I think. So yes, sometimes I've had big discussions with management or record company about things I've not felt very comfortable about. But ultimately, it's my face on the cover of my albums and everybody's going to assume that I'm happy with everything I'm doing. And they're not the ones who have to answer questions about it in interviews or, you know, some things stick, some things 10 years on, you're still talking about it. So it's better to go into everything for the right reasons, I think.
When I've spoken to people about this and trusting your gut, is it something a lot of people say that as you get a bit older, you find easier and easier to understand what you are happy with and not? Or have you always been that way?
Actually, I don't think it's that so much for me. I think because I think I've always been, because I've had this sort of council of people around me that I like to talk to. I think I've always felt quite strong about the decisions once I've made them. But I think the bit of me, the thing that's got easier as I got older, is I'm also a people pleaser and I hate letting people down and I hate conflict and I want everything to run smoothly and I hate demotivating people. So I think you just become better at how to handle situations and better at how to articulate what it is about something that makes you feel uneasy or what it is about something that excites you. Because it's not always saying no to stuff. It can be a positive thing. I mean, I remember a few years back when I'd been making lots of dance records and then my fifth album was basically sort of Eastern European inspired folk album called Wanderlust. You know, that's quite a curveball. And I think you get better at explaining to people why that feels like the next thing to do and taking responsibility for your choices, really. And that does feel really good as you get older, I think. Realizing that, you know, it's okay to, you don't have to have someone else or something else to blame for how things turn out. It's much better if you've done it because it felt like the right thing at the time.
Brilliant. Your second piece of advice, tell us.
So we've gone from sort of profound aspects of instincts to much more practical. My second bit of good advice was how to cook fish, actually. Because I love cooking and it is my intention that all my children will leave home being able to cook. Don't have to be master chefs, but just, you know, being able to make themselves something nice to eat would be good. And Richard, my husband and I, we like cooking together. And there's been a few people that have kind of been integral. Obviously, home life. So my mum, my stepmum, both big cooks. And then I had a Nigel Slater cookbook when I first left home. And he says at the beginning of his book that he doesn't understand why people say that they can't cook. He says, if you can make yourself a cup of tea, you can cook. It's basically just timing and confidence. When Richard and I must have been, I don't know, mid-20s, we did a course about how to cook fish and their advice on how to cook it and how to be more confident about choosing it. Just, I think up until then, I'd just basically been doing a lot of that wrong. And I eat fish a lot. That's probably my favorite thing. So that's the bit of advice that helped me the most. Basically, simple is good with fish, actually.
Simple, okay. I'm always like sticking a bit of foil and bung it in the oven and hope for the best.
That's delicious too. Yeah, roast fish is delicious. But for me, I like sort of pan fried quite quick stuff, you know, just a little bit of salt on the fish, some olive oil in the pan, get it really hot and then sear it on both sides, and then you can bung it in the oven if it needs to be cooked through, if it's something like sea bass or whatever. But I think up until then I'd always overcooked fish. But most of it, even things like squid and stuff, actually it's a funny one with that. You either cook it for not very long at all, so it's 2 or 3 minutes, or a much slower cook. But if you leave it somewhere in the middle, and that's when it gets kind of rubbery and tough. So you see, these things have helped me on my way.
Is food a big part of your life, or is it what it is? Is it about food, or is it about who you're eating with? And
All of the above. Yeah. I've eaten many lovely meals completely on my own. I've eaten many meals with lots of people. I've cooked for many people. But even when I was at school, I used to come home in lunch break when I was sixth form and make myself something to eat at lunchtime because I like cooking. And I know there are loads of people out there who don't really get excited about it. And I'm not like the world's best cook, but I think I just like the sort of contemplative nature of preparing yourself something to eat. And yeah, I've just always found it quite a nice way to kind of get my thoughts in order, I guess.
Totally.
So I get very excited about meal times. Yeah,
I love that. Your third, what's your third piece of advice?
So what is my third bit of advice? Every time I have to get it off my phone because obviously I'm not. And no advice was memorize lists. It's how to decorate the house. Actually,
okay.
I suppose this could be any area of surroundings, but I've moved home a fair amount since I left home. And sometimes when you move home, you really want to put your stamp on things and quite quickly give it your flavor and your personality. But actually, I think homes and environments, and sometimes this applies to projects as well, it's good to have a nice balance between things you've planned and things you sort out quite quickly so that it feels like yours, but then leaving a certain amount of stuff left open so that, for me, like my house has been able to tell me what it needs. And it's a constantly evolving thing. But I think when you first move, you kind of want to get everything right straight away. But actually, like we've been living in our home for 10 years and I'd say it's still kind of, it's still showing me more of like, actually maybe this here and have you thought about this color or change that light or move that picture around? Just letting it evolve really. It's like a constantly moving thing, but ultimately it's always your home. So it's important to feel good about it.
I love, we're in your home now and it's absolutely beautiful. Where do you get your inspiration from? Where do you get the ideas?
Oh, well, thank you. I think it always looks especially good on podcasts.
I promise.
It really comes to life. Well, I love making a home and I want people as well as when they come around to feel very relaxed and it's not stuffy. And, you know, I've got four kids, so everything is going to break at some point. But I love collecting things. And at the moment with a new baby coming, I'm also kind of nesting as well, I think, and just wanting it all to be really cozy. And we're entering into autumn and just really enjoying like time at home. We were away for a lot of the summer and I really missed just being in my own bed and being in my own kitchen and that kind of thing.
I think more and more we're getting so obsessed with interiors. I think Instagram, everyone's obsessed with showing like their favorite corner of their flat and everything.
Yeah.
Is it something you've always been interested in?
Yeah. I used to subscribe to Elle Decoration from when I was probably about 19.
Wow.
I've got piles and piles of them by my bed and ripping pages out and saving things. And yeah, I do like looking at what other people do. And probably as well, I've been very influenced by my own family homes. And I had in my mum's house, it's kind of similar to my taste. So lots of colour, lots of ridiculous, pointless knickknacks that my eldest son seems to have inherited. His room's the same. He keeps packages he likes. He keeps like, you know, little weird dolls from things. And yeah, he's very similar. And then my stepmum and my dad have got a very homely home as well. And she's kind of really good with interiors, so all the colors are really tasteful, and at Christmas everything looks like a photo shoot. It's kind of incredible. I can't quite pull it off, but but I like the idea. But I'm not precious about anything, like, you know, everything's to be used, everything's to live, and every corner of the house has hopefully got life in it. I didn't want any areas that kind of stay stagnant, you know. Everything's got to keep on shuffling forward.
Brilliant. Your fourth piece of advice.
So my fourth piece of advice, it's a little bit of a strange one maybe, but a few years back I did what was the most terrifying thing I've done in my professional career, which was Strictly Come Dancing, which was not something I thought I'd ever be doing. And when I did the show, I'd never seen it before. So basically they'd asked me to do it and it was probably, I don't know, the third or the fourth year in a row they'd asked me about doing it. I'd always just said, why would I want to go on a program that sees if I can dance when I make dance music? Like, that could really shoot myself in the foot. And then I had a girlfriend around called Helen, who I've known since I was 11. And I mentioned it to her and she, her whole body language changed and she got really excited. She's like, oh my God, do you have to do it? And I thought, oh, that's funny. I didn't expect her to really love the show. So after that, it kind of opened my eyes to it. So I went in to do it and then every week it was completely petrifying, like really exciting and exhilarating, but really nerve-wracking. And halfway through, I said to my manager, Derek, I've worked with for, I don't know, I think it's 12 years. I said to him, do you have any idea how scary this thing is? You know, it's absolutely petrifying what you've sort of put me up for. And he said, but what a privilege, like how brilliant to be, you know, so scared and then get through it, which sounds like a really, really sort of tactless, sort of slightly perverse response. But actually, I think there was something in what he said that really resonated with me. And I thought, actually, it's true. Like, if you know you're not in any real, real danger, there's something good about doing things that scare you and just ignite that slight wobbly feeling in your tummy. Because otherwise things can get a little bit comfortable. And it sort of made me realize that over the course of my life, I've quite often done that to myself. Just when everything starts getting quite comfy and I get into a place where I feel like, oh, okay, I can almost sort of do this in my sleep kind of feeling, I have a tendency to then pull the rug out and make it a bit scary again. And I think actually it's good for me. I think it's good for people. So I'm always trying to encourage that in other people and say, if the worst thing about doing something is you're scared of it, that is not a reason to say no. If you've got a legitimate reason for not doing it, fair enough. But if it's only that just the idea makes you nervous and you think, oh, that's a bit of a challenge and I don't know how I'm going to feel about it, then do it. Like, what's the worst that can happen? Sometimes you realise you get through it and then you feel great the other side of it.
And I think especially in a creative industry like yours, you have to mix it up, because otherwise you couldn't have the same inspiration for 10 years and be coming out with great, you know, great music.
Yeah, I think you've definitely got to do that for your creative stuff, as you say, like to keep the challenges and keep sort of shifting your perspective on stuff. But I think even if it's something silly, like sometimes I'll get asked to do like that thing that everybody hates, like public speaking. And I actually really don't like that in real life. But sometimes it just makes me kind of run towards it a bit more, because I think, well, I'll just get through it and then I'll always know that actually I've done it and it's not as bad as I thought. Because most of those things aren't, are they?
No.
And everybody, so much of what goes on is a confidence trick. Hardly anyone walks into a situation that would scare you and thinks, ah, I've got this. Like, it's quite rare for people to feel genuinely comfortable. For most people, like with my thing, like walking out on stage and singing, it's completely unnatural, really, at its base, but it's just through experience and having things go really wrong and realizing that, you know, no one died and life goes on, you kind of get to that point where you think, well, if I know that really, really I'm safe, then what the hell?
Yeah.
So it's quite a nice feeling, really.
Everyone says Strictly is terrifying. you walk out and expose yourself and sing, you know, that is your job. So what was it about going on Strictly that was so terrifying?
No previous experience doing anything like that. It's probably a good place to start.
Yeah.
So I'd never had any dance lessons or anything like that. No dance background. So it's very new.
Yeah.
And I just don't know how, if I can articulate it any better than just, you've learned a brand new skill that you're not really 100% sure you're doing right or you've mastered. And then you have to do it live on telly in front of 12 million people.
Yeah.
That's quite scary, isn't it?
It is the biggest show on television. It really is. Yeah.
But it's also lovely.
Yeah.
And everybody's in the same boat. And it's fun. And you're allowed to smile and laugh and enjoy yourself. And I always found the transition of the show day really helpful, because you're putting hair and makeup and putting this spangly outfit and suddenly, like, well, what are you going to do? Just go and sit around doing nothing? You're dressed like that. You might as well go on a dance floor.
Yeah.
So it kind of allowed a slight out-of-body experience. And also, you're preparing for it. So when it ultimately goes live and they're like, and, you know, the music starts and they introduce your name on the thing, it is still the same dance you've been practicing all week.
Yeah.
So it's not like you've now got to do it, but with your eyes shut or something. But yeah, that fear of it being scary never really goes away, because each week is a new challenge.
Yeah.
So you'd think it's going to get easier. You think each week, like, oh, actually, I've been doing it for 4 weeks now, it's fine. But no, because this week is a jive and last week you did a cha-cha and like, you know,
no help.
Maybe jive is not my thing. Actually, it turned out it really wasn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, you just don't know. You just don't know.
I'm with your friend. I think it sounds like the most exciting thing ever, but I can imagine it's absolutely terrifying.
No, it was also a real privilege. Yeah. It was. And I loved learning something new.
Yeah.
That felt like, I mean, God, it's so amazing. It's so weird. most people I, well, maybe this is more me, I don't know, but I kind of learned most stuff I know probably by the time I was about 8. Like, my knowledge hasn't really grown that much since I was probably 18.
Yeah.
I mean, life experience, yes, but actual facts, figures, you know, like if, you know, my piano playing is plateaued since I was like 14. Yeah. You know, it's like there's so much in life where you go, oh, that's me, that's the standard I'm at. And it's like, well, actually, you don't do any lessons anymore and you're not trying to get any further, so how do you know? But so to get to my 30s and then be learning to dance and like how people waltz and the history of the Charleston or stuff, like, felt like wonderful. I love submerging myself in something new. And you're allowed to, you're actually legitimately allowed to, like, give over your whole day just to dancing all day.
Amazing.
Like, that's pretty glorious.
Yeah. That sounds amazing. What's your fifth piece of advice?
We're rattling through them, aren't we?
Yeah.
Full of good advice today.
You are.
So the next bit of advice was given to me by someone I've worked with for a long time. She's a video director called Sophie Muller. Mm-hmm. And she did my first ever solo video. So Take Me Home. She did Murder on the Dance Floor. Over the years, we've done over 10 videos together. Mm. She's done videos for my last two albums and the artwork as well. So she did all the photography. And she's amazing. I trust her completely. She's got an amazing eye. We always have lots of fun together. And she gave me a really good bit of advice. When I was like in my early 20s, especially, I was still quite young in my way of thinking, very black and white about stuff. So I like this, I don't like that. And if I liked it, it was cool. And if I didn't like it, it was naff. And, you know, probably quite a typical way to be when you're young. And so she might say to me, oh, what about this idea? Or maybe you could try this. And I'd say, no, I don't think that sounds like a good idea. And she would say, let it live before you kill it. And okay. I thought, that's a really good bit of advice, because it just means that before you completely stamp something out and say, I already know the ending to this, it's not going to work, just let something blossom a tiny bit. Mm. And then you might be surprised by the outcome. And actually, again, especially in a creative field, that's a really good bit of advice, actually. And I've definitely heard myself saying that to other people.
Yeah. That's when you know it's a good bit of advice.
Yeah.
You're like, oh yeah, you need to hear this one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it stood me in good stead, I think.
Do you enjoy making music videos? Is it a part of it that you like?
Oh, I love making videos. Mm. I know there are some bands and musicians that don't like it, but I don't identify. For me, it's like you get a whole little film made for your song. Like, that's incredible.
Yeah.
We've had so much fun as well. I mean, it did help that I sort of landed on my feet. Because I have made the occasional video that's been more like pulling teeth when I've worked with some different folk. But with Sophie, we've just always had so much fun. And we basically have made videos where we've thought, okay, what country would we like to go and visit? So we did one in Iceland because we just both liked the idea of going to Reykjavik.
Nice.
And made a whole story there. And then we did two in Mexico just because we thought we'd love to go to Mexico to work on a video. So we ended up in this place called Puerto Vallarta, shooting in Elizabeth Taylor's house. Mm. It's like, you know, what's not to like, really?
Yeah.
You know, margaritas when you're having a bit of a dip in your energy levels. It's all good.
That sounds fabulous.
It really was. It was so much fun. No, we've done loads of that. We've done Italy. You know, we've done Venice and Florence. And we filmed one and she's got a little cottage in the country. We went there for a bit.
Hard work, I'm sure.
Well, the best thing is if you're working with people that are really talented and good at their job, and then you also happen to be really good friends with them, and like, it is honestly, like, it's the best fun, because everybody's got the freedom to do what they do and you know they do it well, and then you end up just giggling and laughing and having lots of fun and also getting this work done. So there's like a little dream team of people that I always ask for any new project, and I've been very fortunate that sort of 90% of the time I've been able to get the first people I've wanted to ask. And especially when you're making, I mean, this is my third album that I'm bringing out on my own label. So I'm very aware that, yes, I'm an independent label, but I'm using people that are incredible. It's not a usual setup. And they do other jobs that are much more flashy. And that means that we can go and have fun. And I can just say, well, it's not going to be a big flashy thing for a major label, but you have got complete freedom. And what should we do? And then it becomes like fun.
Yeah, Amazing. And what's your sixth piece of good advice?
So my sixth piece of good advice actually goes back to my mum again, who's someone that gives me good advice all the time. She's someone that, not just for me, she's kind of the person that a lot of people go to when they've got problems, and she's quite good at, you know, good at being giving sage advice and a wise advice. In fact, my husband said that he's never heard my mum say something he doesn't agree with, which is pretty shocking, isn't
wow.
it? I can't say that. Aren't you sure? But when I was younger, especially, I used to be really bad at going to sleep and get quite bad insomnia, mainly because my head gets a bit buzzy and I find it quite hard to switch off. And rather than her saying, oh, just go to sleep, and being quite sort of harsh about it, which doesn't really work, she would always say, well, it doesn't matter if you don't panic about not sleeping, don't count how many hours you got left to get up, but just relax. And even if you're just resting and not doing much, even if you're just reading a book, that can still be really beneficial. And of course, what happens inevitably if you do that is you end up falling asleep. But I think just encouraging me to not put myself under pressure to sleep, but actually just to be okay with the fact that I wasn't sleeping, was always really helpful.
Yeah.
And you can apply it to other things. But sometimes if something isn't coming naturally that you know is good for you, if you just relax and tell yourself there's no pressure about the fact it's not happening, then it actually tends to happen, doesn't it? So yes, particularly with sleep. And now with my kids, sometimes they'll have nights where they just can't sleep, and I'm always like, well, okay, let's put a couple of books in your bed and just look at the pictures until you start getting, and if you don't drop off, then it's okay. Still good to rest and just give yourself a bit of quiet time,
because that is the world's worst feeling, isn't it, when you're like 3 a.m. I've got 2 hours left, and you're kind of counting
horrible.
Down
and you're lying there like on your fingers like, oh no, no, I've only got 4 hours before I have to get up. It's just and you get that kind of horrible panicky feeling. And you suddenly start thinking of all the things you've got to do the next day, but now they're all under this veil of, I will feel knackered, I won't do any of them well, I'll be emotional, I'll be moody. And I don't get like tons of sleep generally. If it's not one of the kids or work, then I think I just sleep quite lightly these days.
Yeah.
Maybe it's also with having a baby. I don't know. I've been having really vivid dreams. I don't know if you've been experiencing the same thing with your pregnancy.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Where's that come from?
I know. Really complicated. And not always that cheery, actually. They're quite sort of dramatic and anxiety laced. I don't know. I did wonder if it's maybe because the baby's kind of like shuffling around, and like, so somewhere in your head, you're kind of aware that something in you is not sleeping.
Yeah.
Sounds really creepy. Don't mean it that way.
Do you find time to relax, or do you make an effort to find time to relax? Are you good at that?
Depends what your definition of relaxing is, really. I'm not very good at sitting around and just being like, okay, just have 5 minutes doing nothing, because there's always something to be doing. So I get a bit like antsy. So I think I can be a little bit restless, but that being said, I'm quite relaxed in myself about life generally. And I think overall, hopefully, I deal with stress quite well. So I find more that there's just little ways to keep things buoyant and still be enjoying what I'm doing, and even embracing the things where there's a bit of a tipping point and you feel like everything's got a bit chaotic and there's a little bit too many thoughts in your head. Actual relaxing as in running a bath or watching a whole movie or something, like, no, not really. No. But no, I'll do time. It at some point, that will happen. Maybe sometime next year.
No time for Netflix binges then at the moment.
We try, but I tend to fall asleep halfway through stuff.
Same, yeah.
No reflection on the quality of the programming. Yeah. It's just what happens to me.
Yeah.
And it's horrible, isn't it? Because you'll feel quite perky 1 minute and then you're just like, oh no, here it comes. And it's like comes over me like a wave, and suddenly my eyes start like crossing over, and then and then it's just the question of, do I fall asleep on the sofa where it's warm and cozy and I've been sat for ages, or do I just actually get myself up to bed?
Which is the worst bit, absolutely. So we like to finish on a piece of bad advice, because people always like to give advice out and it's not necessarily the best thing, you know. So what is a piece of advice that you've been given that...
Well, it's kind of a broad thing, really. It's just something I hear being praised as a good way to be and a good bit of advice, but I actually think it's really overrated. It might be a bit controversial, actually, but it's being honest. I think people place so much credit on honesty and telling people to their face what you really think about stuff. And I'm like, no. The world needs things that other people don't hear said about themselves, keeping private, thanks.
Yeah.
You know, if you ever watch shows I love to watch, like Big Brother, like Celebrity Big Brother, and I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and all this sort of thing, where you put sort of a load of people in a situation where they're confronted with strangers and have to sort of form this little society. There's always someone that will be quite rude to people and say, oh, that's just me. I speak as I find. You know, you like me or you don't like me, but there's no changing me. And I just think it's so overrated to tell people to their face when you don't agree with something, or you're like, I'm all for sticking to your ground. And if someone says something you think is offensive or fundamentally inaccurate, it's totally fine to you know, correct or to have a debate. All that stuff is brilliant. I love all that. Don't shy away from being who you are or sticking true to your beliefs. But if you don't like someone, they don't need to know you don't like them.
No. And isn't it weird that when people say, I'm just honest, it's always followed by something not nice?
Yeah, horrible.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I just think it's so overrated. And, you know, sometimes someone might helpfully tell me, oh, actually, when you were out the room, this person said this about you. And I'm like, I don't need to know. Maybe I was being unreasonable. Maybe I did do something annoying. Like, they're entitled to, like, let off steam about me.
Yeah.
And in fact, probably most people, even people you adore, when you talk about them without them being in the room, you probably say things in a slightly different way to how you'd say it if they were in front of you. Even people, when you don't even realize you're doing it. So I just don't think people, I think actually that's it's a good oil that makes society work well.
Yeah.
I don't think we need to dismantle that.
No, there's a reason we have diplomacy. Yeah.
Yes.
It happens.
Yeah, and tact and kindness. And it's okay to be oblivious about some things, you know, so long as it's not like hurting anyone. Obviously, all of this goes within a context of doing the right thing at the right time. But just as a general thing, there seems to be this wave of, oh, it's really great to tell people to their face. And it's like, nah, I'm really happy with not knowing.
But not even to their face. Social media opens you up to people saying things that they would never say to you, really.
That's very true.
Do you do much on social media? Or do you like to, or do you kind of put out but not look at the comments and stuff?
No, I'm probably more of a voyeur with a lot of it, really. I'll look through stuff. I'm quite fascinated. I always have been quite fascinated with what people feel compelled to share publicly. So that's why I love reading like celebrity magazines sometimes, really. Not the kind of scoops where they're sort of pap shots, but like literally the interviews people give where they're really candid. You think, why are you telling people this stuff? I'm glad they are, but why?
Yeah.
And so I think social media, my thing with that is if there's something in you that isn't sure whether you should post something, then don't.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's nice to open discussion and stuff, but I've never knowingly said anything pointed about someone else. In fact, sometimes if there's someone, a public figure that I think is really outrageous, I actually don't want to give them the benefit of having worked their way into my comments. Like, you know, it's like, I don't want them to know that I know they exist.
Yeah.
I think that's really petty, probably. In my head, this is like some tiny victory. It's not, but I don't think it should be about getting personal with people. I don't think it's helpful. And anyway, if we're in a situation, once something's happening, I'm more about being positive about getting momentum into making something good come out of it, other than going into sort of big slagging match, really.
Yeah.
But you're right, it's emboldened people, hasn't it?
Amazing. I've loved talking to you, Sophie. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you too.
Thank you so much to Sophie. I thought she was so fascinating and a great interview. For more on her upcoming album, The Song Diaries, and the tour, go to sophieellisbexter.net. If you're enjoying the podcast so far, please do subscribe, rate us, review us. It really helps spread the word. We look forward to seeing you next week for more advice from women worth listening to.